From our speaker tonight, it's Jen from Marlton, New Jersey. Hey everyone, I'm Jen, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, this is a nice little array of people here. There's like people almost in a full circle, so that's kind of cool. Thank you for asking me to speak tonight. Thanks for having me at this meeting. I'm from Voorhees, well, Marlton, New Jersey. It's my home group's the first 164 in Voorhees, New Jersey. So if you ever happen to dare cross the bridge, come on over to my meeting. We're a big book meeting. We're a three legacy meeting. A three legacy meeting means that we talk about the steps, which is recovery. We talk about the traditions, and we also talk about the concepts as well in our meeting, just kind of introducing them. So that's kind of a new step for us, getting the concepts in our meeting. So I'll explain a little bit more about what I mean by that later, maybe. So my sobriety date is April 8th, 2010. I have a sponsor, and she knows darn well that she sponsors me. And the reason why she knows is that because I call her, I talk to her, she hears what I have to say, I'm transparent, she knows my children's names, she knows my friends' names, she knows people that I work with, their names, and my sponsees' names. That's also another thing I do is I sponsor a lot of women as well. It's probably the bright spot of my sobriety. And I talked about my home group, sponsored women, and the sponsor. So, like, if you hear anything tonight, just try to, you know, hear that, right? Hear that as new, is that, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get a sponsor, get a home group, and also get a commitment, too. I do commitments as well. I do commitments within my home group, and I also do service outside of my home group as well. So, I haven't spoken in a while, especially out in person, and definitely not in a pavilion outside, but it's just been a while, and I'm a little nervous tonight, so I am going to say a prayer, and I'm going to invite God in, and hopefully God will have something to say, because I always say you don't want my opinion, you want to hear what God has to say, and if I mess it up, it's, we just blame God, so. God, speak in and through me tonight. Amen. Okay, so I'm supposed to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, all that other fun stuff. I know when I first came to AA, I wanted absolutely nothing to do with you people, right? I was absolutely positive that I was smarter, prettier, funnier, you know, and I didn't need AA, and you guys are just, you know, just a happy group, and God bless you. My first AA meeting that I went to, I remember I walked into that meeting, and I was so broken when I came to AA, you know? I wasn't even sure if I was an alcoholic. I was just trying to come to AA to just kind of figure out how I can drink better, you know, how I can manage that drinking better. I had children at a very young age. I was 16 and 18. I was 16 when I had my daughter. I was 18 when I had my son. I always told myself that I wasn't an alcoholic because I took a pause to stop drinking while I was pregnant with my children. And so, like, that was one of the reasons why for so long after I was, like, holding on to that excuse. And I'll tell you something. I know having those children young, and I just set them aside constantly for alcohol. You know, you guys said the set-aside prayer tonight, and the set-aside, I set aside my children for alcohol, and I didn't even realize I was doing it. I just thought kind of that's just how you live life, and I would do stuff like I would bring my children to parties with me, and I would leave them home alone with the, you know, go to the neighbor's house to go drinking. I would put them to bed at a ridiculously early time, like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night, because I needed to drink. And that's how I brought these little children into this world. For years, I took them places, I did things that I just should not have done, what you don't do with children. when they were younger, I also abandoned them and I left. I did one of those like geographical moves and I moved someplace else and pretty much left them with my parents. For them, I was an emotionally absent parent. I orphaned my kids, right? And why do I say this? Maybe you don't have kids, right? Maybe you don't understand, but like maybe one thing you do understand is that we literally set everything in our lives aside for alcohol. Now, I loved my children, that I know definitely. I absolutely love them more than anything in this world. And I'll never forget one time I was standing in front of the refrigerator and I was looking in the refrigerator and I had these two small kids with me. And I had $12 in my bank account and I didn't have any food in the house. And so what I did is, and if you're an alcoholic, you know exactly what I did. I went and I got the drink instead. I may have fed my kids that night. I really don't remember. I may have fed them rice or whatever I found in the cabinets. And for years and years and years, I beat myself up for that. For years, I told myself I was a really bad mom. But all I was doing was trying to survive. You know, I had this disease where I had this mind that, like, I had this body where I put alcohol into my body and it says, go get another. I take one drink and it says, go get another. And it's just how my whole body mechanics is wired. And then I have a mind that tells me that everything's okay, that I'm not an alcoholic, that I don't need any help. So, you know, having this knowledge about myself and standing there, you know, with my kids and having my kids in their life and the awful things that I've done to my kids, some of the freedom I've gotten from this program was being able to forgive myself for the stuff that I actually did do to my children, because if I truly have conceded to the fact that I am an alcoholic, then I believe the only reason why I didn't feed my kids dinner that night and went to the bar instead or went to go get wine instead was because I was just drinking to overcome this craving beyond my control, right? This obsession that I had. This absolute obsession where you know, I everything gets set aside for those drinks. This went on for a while. It went on out throughout my 20s. I brought another little child into the world. And, you know, you hear a lot of horror stories about drinking, and there were good drinking times, right? I mean, does everyone remember that good, fun time that you had drinking? Like I do. I remember that. It was fun. There were fun times. Until it didn't become fun anymore, right? And where drinking became a necessity, it was something I absolutely had to do in order to survive. And with my drinking, my drinking was starting to get progressively worse. And I started this vicious cycle where I was absolutely determined to quit drinking, right? I'm gonna do this, I can do this, I can quit. I knew that it was an issue. I knew that I started having problems. I knew, you know, it was time to quit, but when it really came down to it, I just could not stop. Or I could, but it, like a couple weeks would go by, or 3 months would go by. 3 months, I stopped drinking for 3 months. I was exercising like I drank, you know, I would be on the treadmill for 6 hours, but you know, I knew that it had to stop, and I just couldn't stop it, and I would try, and I did this for years, and I entered this time where it was a very, very vicious cycle, and they talk about that in the book, the alcoholic torture, and I always ask everyone, what was your alcoholic torture? And my alcoholic torture was I remember waking up in the morning and groggy, shaking, real dry mouth. And next to my bed was a glass of water, and I would reach over and I would grab the water, I would drink the water, and then I would go, what happened, right? And then I was not a blackout drinker, so I pretty much remembered anything, which made for a really fun amends process, but I remembered everything, but it would come back to me just kind of flooding in the morning, and I would go, oh my gosh, I did it again. I drank again last night. And I would sit there in the morning and I would say to myself, all right, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Let me go get the kids ready. I'm gonna go to work. I'm going to go to the store after work. I'm gonna go get a healthy meal. I'm gonna go work out at the gym. I'm not gonna drink tonight. I'm gonna take all my alcohol. I'm gonna go throw it away. I am not going to drink. And that was at about 8 o'clock in the morning. And somewhere around 11 o'clock, my mind would go, you know, it's Thursday. And you've got a party you gotta go to this weekend. And I mean, maybe today's not the day to stop. Like, maybe you should reconsider this. And like, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that whole conversation I had with myself going, oh my God, I drank again. I can't believe it. I'll never, ever, ever drink again. By 2 o'clock, that entire conversation was completely out of my head. I never even had that conversation with myself inside. And by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it was, you know what? I'm gonna go get that healthy dinner, but I'm gonna go to the store that has the liquor store right next to it, and let me go pick up some wine while I'm there, and yeah, that's what I'll do. And so that's what I would do when I'm, you know, somewhere around 4 or 5 when I ended work. I would go to the store and I would go pick up the alcohol, and I would go home and I would pretty much burn dinner for the kids, and then I would start drinking, and I never went to sleep. I would pass out, right? But sometime before I passed out, I would go get a glass of water and I would go sit it up by my bedside. And then I would pass out. And then I would wake up in the morning. I'd look at the glass of water, I'd take a sip, and I'd start that whole process all over again. I'd have that same conversation in my head every morning at 8 o'clock for like 2.5 years. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, for 2.5 years, that conversation would take place. It might not even have been 2.5 years. It might have been even longer. I really don't know. But that's what I call my alcoholic torture. Because that whole cycle that I went in was absolutely insane. It was just insane behavior. It was insane. It was just me trying to tell myself that I got this, right? They say that when we're in that position, we're beyond human aid, meaning no one can help me. Even though I think I can, and that's the dangerous part about this disease, is I think I can help myself when I'm at that point, but I really can't. So I drank like that, and I don't know, somewhere around January of the year I got sober, I put on my New Year's Eve list that I was going, or my resolution list, because that was every year that was on my resolution list. It's like January 2010, and I said, you know what, I'm going to get sober this year. I wrote down, find local AA meetings, because, you know, you guys all, it's so hard to find AA, right? And I went, like, wrote, find local AA meetings. Now, I got sober in April, and not in January, and we'll tell you what happened in January, though. I had a first-step experience, part of the first-step experience in January. And I was me, I was home alone, the older kids were out, the younger one, I'm not sure where she was, because it's the kind of mom I was. And I had a couple glasses of wine, and I went to Guitar Center, and I went and I bought a guitar. I bought a $350 guitar. Sure, I couldn't afford it. I think I was behind on my mortgage and my car payments, but I went and bought a guitar. Then I came home, and I did my hair, and I put like some wild makeup on my face. And what I told myself, it was that, you know what, Jen? You're an alcoholic. You might as well just go out like an alcoholic. And in my mind, I had it where I was gonna go out like a rock star. You know, I was gonna be like a Janis Joplin and just play the blues on my guitar and let you know, how I'm feeling inside. I went home and I drank, and I just for the first time in my life actually surrendered to the fact that I was an alcoholic. You know, I'm a true believer that God speaks to us when we're drunk, even, you know. Sometimes we hear it, sometimes we don't. I didn't hear it that night. This isn't only in hindsight that I can see this story, but I've heard it drunk before. I've heard God talk to me drunk. I'll talk about that in just a second. So I had this guitar. And I went to go pick it up, and I went to go strum out like everything that I was feeling inside. And I was so delusional. I had never played a guitar in my life before, and nothing came out because I didn't know how to play a guitar. So I'm just like trying to nothing. I was a complete moron. But what did happen that night was the fact that I was able to admit that I was an alcoholic. That was like January, February, and the reason why I know that is because I got Facebook pictures to prove it on my timeline. So fast forward a little bit later, and I'm on this 2 week on, 2 week off again. I don't know how I did that, but it was like 10 days, like on that 10th day, and now I know I'm an alcoholic at this point. I absolutely know it, but I still won't go to those AA meetings, those stupid AA people, right? And I won't go, and I know it. And then I get to that 10th day, and it's time to drink again, and the mind comes back, you know, that mind that tells us, like, you know, maybe you're just really making just this big deal out of nothing. Maybe you're really not that bad. And so I would go drink again, and again, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and I was just at about day 10 when that mind starts coming back, and I get a message from a friend that I went to high school with, and she asked me to go roller skating reunion with her. Now what's really cool is like roller skating is like kind of back, which is pretty neat, but it wasn't back then. But she asked me to go to this roller skating reunion, and I said, yeah, okay. And I remember getting this message from her, and I remember thinking like, oh, she partied. Like, we're gonna go get drunk, and we're gonna go roller skating. This is gonna be awesome. And boy, I never roller skated when I was drunk before, you know, because I was a kid when I went. So she came to pick me up, and I got in her car, and probably within the first 3 minutes, I said to her, do you drink? And she said, no, you know, I'm looking for my next drinking buddy. And she said, no, do you? And I was like, homo. And I said, nah, you know, it's been about 6 months. I just totally lied, because we do that. We lie. There was no reason for me to lie. I just lied. I said 6 months. Like, if I would have said 2 weeks ago, it wouldn't have made a difference. But I said 6 months ago, I haven't had a drink, and I don't know why. Right? I didn't know anything. And she just looked me dead in the face. You know how we do this, right? She just looked right through my soul with her eyes. Now, I want you to picture this. Like, we're sitting in the car, and she goes, how's that working out for you? And I was like, oh. Like, she saw me. Does that make sense? She saw what I have inside. She saw what I was going through. And I was like, it's not. And here she had, at that time, she had 9 years sober. And I had no idea this girl that I partied with in high school was going to take me to my first AA meeting. We did go roller skating that night, but 2 nights later she invited me to an AA meeting, and I went to an AA meeting. To this day I call her my angel. To this day I send her a message on my anniversary every year thanking her for what she did for me. She saved my life. That woman saved my life, and all she did was show up to go to a roller skating party. She just happened to be in the right place at the right time. Maybe she prayed, maybe she heard God that day. I certainly didn't. I was looking for my next drinking partner. So she takes me to my first AA meeting, and I see that, you know, I walk in and everybody's so freaking happy, and I don't like it, you know? And they're smiling and they're talking and they're joking and they're friendly and they're asking, hey, how are you? And, you know, and there's Stella, and Stella's like 70 and she's like laughing, ah, ha, ha, ha. And I was like miserable, you know, I want to kill people at this point. And I'm pretty sure that everybody's leaving the meeting and getting stoned in the parking lot and coming back to the meeting because they were that happy, right? But that wasn't the case. And I don't know what happened at that meeting, but I know I heard some things and I listened. And I know when I went home that night, for some reason, I just didn't want to drink again, right? Not forever, but just that night, right? I just didn't want to drink that night. So I went to a few more meetings, and the same stuff started happening. So I just started listening and hearing, and you know, every time this mind would start to grow back and say, you know, you're really making a big deal out of nothing, just you know, that someone would call me from AA and say, you know, say something, or I'd go to a meeting that just happened to say exactly what I needed to hear in order to keep me in this program. My first year in sobriety, I was broken. I was a mess. I came in here, I had just gotten out of a horrible relationship, and at 4 months sober, I started up another relationship with a married man, and I was just completely just broken. And I wasn't working the steps of AA. I'd love to say I was one of those people that, you know, they came in and they started the big book right away, but, you know, I think I was so broken that I don't even know if someone came up to me with a big book and the solution, which they probably did, I just didn't hear it at that time. I don't know if I even would have done it. I joke and say Bill Wilson could have tried to take me through the steps in my first year of sobriety, and I probably would have tried to sleep with him instead. Like, I just was not there. I was not listening. But, you know, I still did listen, and I hear little things. You know, I heard, you know, those slogans that they talk about really kind of get a bad rush. But, you know, they worked for a little bit for me in the beginning. But, you know, like, go to meetings, and, you know, I heard go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I couldn't because I was a single mom. And but, you know, it kind of worked. You know, he was pointing a finger, you got three pointing back at you. And this whole time I think that I'm doing AA, and this whole time I'm looking at the steps up on the wall and telling myself that that's how you do the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a woman sponsor me, and she started taking me through these steps by using the 12 and 12. Which I don't recommend. You know, the steps are here in this big book. All you gotta do is read it, and then once you go through that, then you can go take a look at the 12 and 12. But 9 months over, I was sitting in a parking lot at Sam's Club, and it was just around Christmas time, or maybe my timeline's a little off. My short-term memory's still shot from those days, but sitting in the parking lot, and I'm praying to God that there's not alcohol in the store, because I was going to go in and I was going to buy alcohol and drink again. And something just said move. So I started my car up and I moved, and I called a woman, Peggy, and asked her, she talked about this big book stuff, and I asked her to take me through the steps. And she took me through the steps, and you know, she explained to me some things about my disease. She explained to me what alcoholism is, you know, which I didn't understand. You know, when she talked about when I put alcohol into my body, it says, go take another drink, right? I just got to go take another drink. And that explained a lot to me, you know. One of the things that you know, ask yourself is, do you really know what alcoholism is? Like, can you really understand that and explain that? Because I couldn't for a while. And so when I learned that, it explained things to me. Like, one time the kids were out of the house, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to get really drunk tonight. You know, I was really drunk every night, but that night I was going to get especially really, really drunk. And I went, the kids weren't there, and I went and I poured myself a glass of wine, and I set it like next to my bedstand there, and I was going to get drunk and watch TV. And I left the room, and I had to come back, and when I came back in the room, I jumped on the bed like Superman, and my toe caught my bed, and I heard crack, right? And I'm laying on my bed, and if you've ever broken a toe, it's really, really, really painful. I'm looking in the bed, and my toe's like looking back up at me like this. And I was like, oh my gosh, right? But I had already had that first sip of alcohol. So who knows where this story goes? What do you think I did? Do you think I went to the hospital and got my toe reset? And maybe that shooting pain that's going up my sciatic, like that was just killing me? Do you think I took care of that? Or do you think I hobbled downstairs on my good leg, scooching on my butt, all the way downstairs to go pour myself more wine? I'll take care of the toe later. Right? Because when I have a sip of alcohol, I have to have another. Then I've got this mind that says, you're not an alcoholic. And I have to watch that. I have to watch that. I have 12 years sober. I have to watch it today. Because my mind, even though I have been through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I recovered, I do this work, I have this mind that these thoughts will take me back to a drink. Right? If I'm not transparent with my sponsor, if I'm not telling her exactly what I have going on in my life, sometimes I can't see. We can't see what we can't see. And there's times that throughout my sobriety, like multiple times, that I have been so close to taking a drink again. I've been so thirsty and I didn't even realize it. Because I have an ego that tells me that I'm spiritually fit when I'm not. I can swear by that. That's the scary thing about this disease. I'm not guaranteed sobriety. I'm not guaranteed sobriety at all, even if I do this work. It keeps me sober, so I'm going to keep doing it. But I believe my God knows what I'm doing. I believe my higher power is going to keep me sober because he sees that I'm doing God's work here. So that was my first year of sobriety, yay me. And I've gone through all kinds of things in sobriety and early sobriety. I had a brother who died of a heroin overdose 2 days before my year anniversary and 4 days after I had completed the fifth step. I can guarantee you right now, I don't know if you'd be talking if I'd be here tonight had I not completed that fifth step at that particular time, because my brother died. And if you've ever been through a death of a sibling, it is a death of anyone you love. It is not an easy thing to go through, especially when you got half a program under your belt. I kept moving through AA. Let me check my time here. No, I've got plenty of time. I'm trying to pace the story. I went on through AA and about 2.5 years sober, I pretty much wrapped up dating the married man. Life got very painful. I almost drank again. And I had sponsors that told me that, you know, part of the amends process for me was starting to live like a woman in an AA, you know, start living by these spiritual principles. And I don't think dating married people is on spiritual principles. At about 2.5 years sober, I got really emotionally sick, and I was having wild mood swings, and I was probably going about 2 meetings a week. I'd lost contact, 2 meetings a month. I'd lost contact with my sponsor at that point. And I found myself at a hormone specialist because I wanted to know what was wrong with me. So I go to the hormone specialist, they run all this blood, they find absolutely nothing wrong with me. They ask me to fill out a family questionnaire, and the family questionnaire just ask all kinds of questions. You know, does your dad have heart disease? Does cancer run your family? And my family is pretty healthy for the most part. But when it got to substance abuse, I looked and I was like, well, both grandfathers died of alcoholism. My brother by this time had already died of this disease. And there was, you know, all kinds of other disease there. And I look, and staring back at me black and white is a sheet telling me, oh my God, you are an alcoholic, right? 2.5 years sober, completely forgot that I was an alcoholic. I knew I needed to do something. For me, I didn't complete my amends for the first 3 years in the program. I would not suggest doing that. Trust me, it's hard to make amends. I almost drank over it because I didn't do it. It's really hard. But there's nothing worse than going to a meeting and sitting on an amends that you haven't made. It's awful. And so what I did is I got with another sponsor and I said, all right, I need you to take me through the steps again. And she did. And, you know, instead of just making the amends, I made her start all the way over from the beginning because that's how I was going to do it, me running my program. And I finally finished up all of my amends. And that's when things started to change for me. That's when I kind of got out of that danger zone. And I started really doing AA. And I learned stuff about, like, the traditions. They used to call me like the tradition Nazi because, you know, people would call me up and they'd be like, I got a tradition question for you. And I would give them the answer. And, you know, I was kind of like, we all go through this stage where we're like big book Nazis and we're going to like tell everybody how to go through the steps. This is how you do it. And I kind of did that with the traditions. And I just think it was a stage that I had to go through. And, sometimes I still go through if I get on a kick, but, you know, I learned a little bit about that. And, I don't want to talk about what I'm about to talk about, but I'm going to talk about it. Just got a stab on my shoulder. So about the time that I was learning the traditions, I had a male sponsor. And I had maybe about 3.5, 4 years sober at that time. And that male sponsor told me that he was going to teach me how to lay boundaries. And the way he was going to teach me how to lay boundaries is he was going to touch certain parts of my body. And if that was, that's how he was going to teach me how to lay these boundaries. And if I didn't like how it felt, I would have to tell him. The reason why I talk about that now, talk about that today, is because I was broken when I came in here. That is not the first time that I had been taken advantage of in AA. And I talk about this stuff because it does exist in AA. I talk about this stuff because this program means a lot to me. A friend of mine is 31 years sober. She just left AA about a week ago because she said she experienced more abuse by men and women in AA. than she has in her sober in outside life. And so I talk about this in case you got a similar story or in case you want to stop. They call it 13 stepping. I don't call it 13 stepping, I call it being sexually inappropriate with someone. I see another thing in AA, people use a lot of spiritual trickery. Let me show you how spiritual I am and get in your pants. I've seen that happen a lot. It's also happened to me on several occasions as well. So again, I don't tell these stories because I'm looking up to drum up any controversy, but I'm telling these stories because these are my experiences. And I could have drank. I could, you know. And our job here in AA is we got to keep people safe. We got to let people get sober. And I'm not generalizing this to like a man or a female. I 13-step someone too. I've since made amends for that, and that was a long time in my past as well. But, you know, we got to really take a look at what our primary purpose is here and take a look at some of that stuff as well. You know, it blows my mind because I can be in a business meeting and I can say something, I can make a suggestion, I can bring up new business, and the room will say, Now, I know the traditions, I know the concepts. I can usually talk about them. I can talk an hour about concept 9, bore you to death, but I can do it. And I know this stuff. And then a couple of weeks later, I would go into the meeting and a male would say the same exact thing that I did. And they would be like, yeah, great idea. You know? And again, I don't say these things because I want to bring up controversy. I just want to make everybody aware that you know, I deserve to stay sober just as much as anyone else. You guys deserve to stay sober. We just kind of all got to look out for each other here. So that happened to me at about 5 years sober. At 9 years sober, let me back up. 7 years sober. Some of all the odd numbers, you know. I guess you're like 4, 6, and 8 were great. But so at about 9 years sober, 7 years sober, I met a man in AA. Oh God, he spoke so well. Oh, that he came up to the microphone and God, he had this great message, and I would look at him and I'd be like, God, that's a man who really does this deal, you know. So I did what I did. I, you know, friended, requested him on Facebook, send him a message. Hey, why don't you come down to my home group a little bit later? Long story short, about 8 months later, we were engaged. He had moved in. And a year later, we were married. And in true alcoholic form, right? Like, we just do things quickly and we do things in extreme and we kind of really don't think, and I'm kind of leaving stuff out with my sponsor again. We get together and we get married and things kind of started to change, you know? The blinders came off the person that was speaking up at the front of the podium wasn't the person that I was sitting next to, sleeping next to. And 10 days after we got married, we got pregnant. Now, I'm no spring chicken, despite what you guys might think. I was 43 years old when I got pregnant. Now, I was 16. When I had my first child, 18, when I had my next, 27, and then 43. I've just been a mom for a really long time. And so I find out I'm pregnant, I'm 43 years old, I'm in AA, I'm doing AA, right? I've got like, out of this little baby, and I've got 14 sponsees at this particular time. Like, that's just crazy. And I'm like taking them through and, you know, just going to meetings and something's wrong, right? Something's wrong inside. And I go through a fist up with my sponsor, and my sponsor says to me, how long have you been getting abused for? And I realize once again, I'm in AA, and I'm in a relationship, and it's an abusive relationship. And so I start waking up to that fact, because if anyone here has had any kind of abuse, you have to wake up to it. It's a process. It just doesn't happen overnight. So I wake up to that, and with my daughter, my baby daughter was 3 months old, something inside of me said, you know what, maybe you just need to go look. And now I'm not a snooper. I don't look through people's stuff, but something inside of me told me to go and look, and I didn't like what I found. And I found all kinds of stuff, and I found this person, this man that I had married, who I really didn't get a chance to get to know. Not only was he emotionally abusive, but he also, too, was seeing other women, and he was cheating on me, and he was going and speaking at meetings and talking to all of the new women, and they just thought he was just wonderful and great, and carrying on conversations with him, and who knows where it went. And when I confronted him, he took off his ring and he threw it at me, and he drove down to Florida, leaving me with a 3-month-old baby at the time. I was breastfeeding full time, working from home full time, and had 14 sponsees, thank God, because I almost drank again. And what I realized through this whole process after he left and he left me with this little girl is that I got so far away from God, I made a man my higher power. Right? See, we go on all kinds of sprees, and the big book talks about that. You know, we can kind of go on all kinds of sprees here. And I just had gotten so far away from this higher power of mine. And it was hard, and I cried a lot. If you've ever been through something like that, it's devastating. If you haven't, take time to get to know someone before you marry them. Please do. So he came back to the area maybe about 3 or 4 months later, and was never really able to fully commit to being in my daughter's life full time again. And he does see her every other weekend and shows up occasionally when needed. But that's few and far between, and now I'm 46 years old, I'll be 47 next month, and I'm a single mom taking care of a baby again, and it's been difficult. And you know, I've had to go through the steps again, and I've had to take a look at some of these resentments that, you know, I have specifically on him, and part of the issue that I had with him is I just couldn't forgive him. I just could not forgive him for what he did to me. And it was the storyline I'm telling myself over and over and over again. And if you were in my life and I loved you, I was going to talk about him to you, right? I did this to my family members. I did this to the people I love. And I was going to let you know, and that's what I did, you know? And I walked around AA and I talked about him in AA. You know, I'm in Quakertown right now, and I hope, you know, if he does hear this, and it's nothing I wouldn't say to his face, really, but I think it's in a general way also. And, you know, it's what happened through that whole process is that, you know, it brought me closer to this higher power, and I just realized that this higher power is most important, not some guy or some shopping spree or some, you know, money spree of some sorts or an eating spree. You know, it just brought me into the fact that, like, right here, right now is where I have to do God. See, when I'm in the future, I'm thinking about, you know, it's high anxiety. When I'm in the past, I'm thinking about, oh, poor me. But, like, when I'm present is where I find God. And it really hit that home for me, because I was just not in the right way. So, you know, would you have resentments? Of course I did, you know. And the beauty of this program is that I was able to get free of those resentments. I was able to be free of him. I don't love him anymore, and I don't hate him anymore. And that's because I have gone and done this work. That's because I was able to show up and sponsor women and so on and so forth. So, you know, I bring that up today again because it is part of my experience. It's part of what I did. And again, I have this ego that tells me that I am spiritual when I am not, and I don't even see it. And I have to be in this program. I have to be driving out to Quakertown from an hour away to do these types of things. I have to call my sponsor, spend time with my sponsees, so this stuff is revealed. My time again. Another big part of this process for me was the amends process. That was huge, and I still pray for amends. I pray for amends all the time. Like, dear God, please show me an amends that I have to make, because I know what a great process it is. If I can leave you with something tonight, other than my breakup stories, ask God what amends you still owe, because sometimes, like, God reveals them at certain times, and I have two good amends stories, because I love good amends stories. The first one was, I'm driving down the road, and this was like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. It just hits me out of nowhere. It was like, you stole dentures when you were 13 years old at a dentist office. Did you too? That's the kind of alcoholic I was. So I stole dentures when I was 13 years old. I was there with my friends, and there were brand new dentures laying off to the side. Someone was getting brand new teeth that day, right? And I took them and I put them in my pocket. They didn't even fit in my mouth. And, like, I think my mom got them a year later and said, why do you have dentures in your drawers? Anyway, so it dawns on me. And then I'm driving, and I'm two blocks away from CVS, and I pull into the CVS. And by the time I pulled into the CVS, which was 3 minutes from that thought of I owe an amends, I was like, you really don't know what amends for stealing on dentures, that's silly. And I walk in, and the person greeting says, hey, how you doing? And they smile, and they have like four teeth. And I was like, oh God, okay, I guess I owe this amends. So I tried to track down the old dentist office that had it, and they don't. They weren't there anymore. I think the guy was old. And so I went to an old dentist office, or I went to a dentist office in my town, and I walked in, and they opened up at 3 o'clock, and I had to speak with the dentist, and they looked at me like, can we help you? And I said, no, I really need to speak to the dentist. They said, well, she's in a meeting, she'll be out in about 15 minutes, have a seat. So I go in and have a seat, and there's other patients there, and people, and they're all kind of looking at me and like, why are you here? Like, what are you selling? And while I'm sitting in that waiting room, I was thinking, right? I was like, get out of here, they're all gonna laugh at you. And I'm thinking, and then it hit me. I stole somebody's smile that day. Someone was going to the dentist. They were really happy. They were getting their new teeth. And I went and I took their teeth. And they probably had to go home that day and tell their significant other that they don't have teeth, or that dentist screwed up and had to reorder new teeth. And, what I did actually just hit me. And it hit me in that program, that ripple effect that I had sent out, like that my alcoholism had sent out, my little baby alcoholism at age 13. It was just brewing, no pun intended, no pun intended. And then just as I'm like about to just book out of there, the dentist comes out and she says, can I help you? And I looked at her and I told her the same story that I just told you guys. And I said, I think I owe some people some teeth. And she just went, her eyes welled up with tears, and we locked eyes, and we looked at each other like we just saw what she saw, and we looked. And her eyes welled up with tears, and so did mine. And dental hygienist was like, oh, that is weird, that is wild. And so I said, look, just, she said, well, we normally don't take care of people that don't have teeth, because we're a dentist office, we take care of teeth. She said, but if someone comes in, we'll let you know. And about 2 weeks later, sorry, this is my son calling me. About 2 weeks later, I go into the office, or I call. I'm like, what's going on? I don't hear anything. I'm just about to call them, and they said, we found someone. I said, do me a favor. Please make sure it's done anonymously. I didn't want anyone. I didn't want to take credit for that. And a couple weeks later, I got a letter in the mail, and it was from a lady, and they didn't give her my address, but they mailed it for her, and she thanked me for teeth. And she got to smile again for teeth, and like I gave somebody back that smile. I'm like, this is what AA does, you know, it does stuff like that. Like, I don't know if anybody here believes in energy, but if you can't tell by my talk already, I do, right? There's like a certain energy when I steal something from somebody, there's an energy that goes out into the universe, and it's just not good. But when I go and make that right, like, God can't write this stuff, and God will like take that ripple effect and just multiply it, right? That person is standing here today and smiling because I made an amends, right? So I'm always asking, I'm always praying. I had an amends recently, this just happened last week, that I was told not to do by multiple sponsors. And the reason why I would have harmed somebody else, I would have had to get their contact information from somebody else. And I was just laying there, and I just prayed, because I would pray for this woman, and I would say, just please, when the timing is right, let me know when I need to do this amends. And out of nowhere, a telephone number popped in my head. I hadn't talked to this woman in 30 years. And the number said, and popped in my head, and I sat up and I said, Paul, you might think I'm crazy. Good. I kind of am, and I don't care. But it popped up in my head, and I called the number, and I said, what's the worst case scenario? They say I have the wrong number. And I called, and I heard a familiar voice that I hadn't heard in 30 years. And this woman answered the phone, and I got to make amends to her for drinking her alcohol in her house while I was watching her daughter. And like, this is the kind of stuff that just, you, how does that happen? How does that even happen? I mean, do you remember numbers from 30 years ago? Maybe my best friend, but just some random number that I babysat for. So I got to make amends that way. So, you know, I tell the amends process because it is such a powerful process for me, and it has been. I talk about a lot my children that I emotionally abandoned at age 16 and 18, that my bond was with alcohol and not with them. And there was a hole in my heart for that. And the way I keep showing up now with them is I try to answer the phone whenever they call. I try to be there. I talk to my children almost every day. Almost every day. I have some conversation with them. My daughter she's married with three boys, so I have grandsons. My son, who just called me, and you can be sure I'll be calling him on the way home, he's got a grandson. And then I have a three-year-old little girl, and this is the stuff you can't write. I abandoned those little kids that I had. I put alcohol first. I get sober, I come into AA. I unexpectedly have a baby at age 43. A little three-year-old kid, and I get to raise babies with my babies. And this relationship that I never thought that I would have with my kids starts to blossom into a friendship. And those little kids, those little grandkids, and the little unexpected three-year-old starts bringing us all together. They start bringing us close. My daughter's here tonight. She's sorry I'm calling out, but she's sitting right up front here. She just drove an hour and a half to hear her mom speak in AA. And, you know, she's been through the ringer, and, you know, she's one of my best friends. And I don't say that because she's sitting here. If she wasn't sitting here, I'd say the same thing. You should hear our conversations. We were talking about the appropriate lipstick matches on the way up. You have TikTok and you just laugh, you know why. There, she just got that. But, you know, and my son, he's close to me also, and like, I swear this is like some of the gifts that this AA program gives you, you know, like, it might not happen in that specific order, it might be a different situation, but like, I can't write that. I can't write that I'm gonna have two babies as a teenager and then raise babies with my babies later in life and become closer to them than ever. Like, God gave me that bond back with them that I thought I destroyed. And then I've got this little 3-year-old and she keeps me busy and it's really hard. My life is really hard right now as a little 3-year-old. It's a lot. And I just found out this past weekend, just acknowledged this past weekend that she's most likely has autism. She hasn't had a full diagnosis yet, but sometimes when you know, if anyone's ever been through that. So I'm going through that right now. But all through this, right, through divorces, through kids late in life, through deaths, I've never had to drink. Came close. But I just did this. And like, how did I do it? I did it through these steps. I do it, you know, I do my nightly review every night now. There was a long time until now, I was like, I do it. I do it every night. If I forget at night, I do it first thing in the morning, but it's rare that I forget at night. I work with newcomers. I work with oldcomers. I work with new people. I stay in this book. I do service. And somehow that's got me through this thing that we call life. And what I'm starting to realize is that I'm pretty cool. I'm starting to love myself. I'm starting to feel that I have this self-worth that I never felt before. And if you come from a place like I did between my childhood and my drinking and the abuse that I suffered, you don't really think much of yourself when you come into this program, but like through this program, like I have developed like a sense of self-worth that I know that I would have, I don't know if I would ever, like God gave me that, right? And again, what did I do? I just showed up. I just said, yeah, I'll drive to Quaker Town. You wanna go, Allison? And she did, so. All right, I'm out of steam, guys. Thank you guys so much for having me. I hope you got something from this tonight, so thanks.